Accession number 30,005 was Ted Hitchcock, room 6. Now, what happened then? How did you get a new pilot? You know, because the old one was injured.
The old one was injured. And
the replacement, you said, was no good.
We had a replacement, and for some unknown reason, he didn't stay long. But we didn't do any ops with him. We did quite a bit of flying, but we didn't do any ops. And then he was posted, and I was an odd bod, more or less waiting to go into a pool. And Collins came back then. He'd been shot down in France and evaded and walked over the Pyrenees. He was in prison in Spain for a time, and then he came back, and he was helped out by the movement, so I don't think he ought to have flown again, really. But anyway, he did.
Now, do you remember his flight sergeant? Do you remember his surname? His first name, sorry.
Well, it's Morris Collins.
Now, what was he like as a chap?
Oh, he was a great character. He was a good pilot, but he was a bit of a boy on the ground. He was up to all sorts of tricks, but he was a good lad. He died about 6 months ago.
Now, who was the navigator? I mean, did that...
Well, the navigator was a fellow named Coleman, Reg Coleman.
What rank was he? Was he a sergeant as well?
Yes, we were all the same rank.
So all flight sergeants?
Yeah. And he'd been flying with a Canadian who went back to Canada, and he was an odd bod like me. And it was through him that I got into the crew, I think. But I remember him saying, "How about flying with Collins?" Oh, I said, "He won't want me." He got to, there were other bods on the squadron, spare bods. But anyway, we crewed up.
And you started flying with Collins round about, late July. So all this took quite a while.
Yes, it did.
It took about 4 months.
I was a long while without, what with flying with Levy for a time and then hanging about, yes. Well, then when Collie came back and we crewed up, and then we started again.
Seems to have made your first raid on the 18th of August on Flushing, in a factory.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember any of the raids you did with them? I mean, the raids would be pretty similar, I would imagine, but do you remember anything?
Not particularly, no.
So, it just carried on much the same?
Yeah.
There's a raid in September on Rouen, and then Dutch coast. It seemed to switch a bit to the Dutch coast rather than the French coast.
Yeah.
But no close shaves?
Well, no, not really.
Anything you
know? We had one that Tom was talking about. He was here last week.
Tom?
The gunner that we picked up, Tom Brady.
Oh, he had a gunner as well?
Oh, yes, we had a gunner on the Mitchell.
So when did you switch to Mitchell then?
Pardon?
When did you switch to Mitchell?
Sorry. Well, we switched to Mitchell's about the time we crewed up with Collins. We switched over from Boston's to Mitchell's.
Well, let's talk about the gunner first. So he was a flight sergeant as well.
We were all the same rank.
And what was his name?
Brady. Tom Brady.
What was he like?
Well, he was a great fella. He was sat in that chair a week ago.
A good air gunner.
Yeah, yeah. Good character.
Now, what did you think of the Mitchell?
Well, we liked the Mitchell.
It was a Mitchell 2, wasn't it?
It was a fraction less manoeuvrable than the Boston, but it was a good aircraft.
In what way was it good, though?
Well, I don't know. The pilots liked it, and that was the main thing. And, of course, it had got twice the bomb load of the Boston, and it had got 0.5 guns instead of 303s.
Now, were you still a wireless operated gun, or were you?
Yeah. Yes.
So you still had a gun?
Oh, yes.
So what was your gun? Was he a rear gun, Brady?
Well, no, it was a turret on the top.
So a sort of mid-upper gun?
Well, yes, I suppose.
What was your gun?
Well, this is the funny part about it. When we started flying Mitchells, I had a couple of Brownings in a dustbin with an effort that let down. Then they changed it to waste guns, and we had a gun either side at the waist. And then at the end, they put one down the tail. It wasn't very comfortable, but it was a good position.
So any operations in the Mitchell, remember?
Yeah. There's one there. Mimiac.
Mimiac.
Well, there's a leaflet there, a red leaflet. It's something that a lot of people have never heard about. The V3.
Now, when was this? Well, actually, there's a note of the thing. Is it on the 5th of November 1943? Because there's a note on the side, V3.
Ah. I can't remember the dates, but it was.
Tell us about it then. What do you remember of that raid?
What about that particular raid?
Yes. And what was the V3
then? The V3 was, it was supposed to be Jerry's main weapon. It had a barrel on it longer than a football pitch. And it was, he said, if it was perfected, it would have blown London off the map in half a day. But it wasn't given a lot of publicity. And we went on this particular raid, and all we could see was a single track rail running into the hillside. And it turned out eventually that there were thousands of blokes employed there underground working on this gun. And eventually, President Kennedy's brother was put into an aircraft that was filled with bombs. The pilot and the navigator, I think he was a navigator, took off, and the idea was that they bailed out, and another crew took over and dropped this thing on the V3 site. But the aircraft blew up, so Kennedy lost his life. There's a monument down there, in the hillside, with a monument to Kennedy and also to one of our 226 pod who died, got killed. But there was very little known about it, but if you read that, it...
Now, what happened on your raid? Anything in particular?
Not particularly, except there was a lot of flak, and we couldn't understand why, because there was nothing to see. And, of course, it turned out that everything was underground. It was chalk. It was built into chalk. It was a continuation, I suppose, of our chalk, this side, the channel. But they say it was a marvellous feat because there was no propping up. What they did, they built tunnels, and they were self-standing. But as far as we were concerned, it was just a track into the hills. But as they were digging this stuff out, they were dyeing it green and then tipping it so that it looked like grass. It was a fantastic effort, really.
And you were hit, it said your aircraft was hit several times.
We got hit a lot of times, but nothing serious.
So it would be just little holes?
Well, we got a lot of little holes.
How bad?
Well, there were lots of little flak holes about the size of your thumbnail, and they either dinted or came part of the way through, or in some cases they came right through. But it was the bigger stuff that caused the trouble. We had the starboard petrol tank blown up one time. Another time we were hit.
What happened then? So how did you cope with that?
Well, we just coped. Pilot got the craft back and that was it. Fortunately, she didn't fire.
Anything else? Any other raids you remember in that first tour?
I can remember one particular raid. And that was at Venlo. And we'd been after this, it was a bridge, and it was important to Jerry because it was on a supply route. And we'd been after this on a couple of occasions and damaged it, but Jerry had got men there working on it more or less all the time to keep it open. And eventually they decided that it got to go. So it was made a group job. And so there were three squadrons working on it. There was 88 squadron, the French Lorraine squadron, and 226. And as it happened, we used to take it in turns to lead. And as it happened this particular time, 88 led, then the French went in, and then we were the last box, or the last squadron, and we were leading our second box, which meant that by the time we went in, they'd already had five boxes in bombing. And as we turned off the dog leg onto the bombing run, the pilot suddenly said, he always referred to us as you two in the back. He said, you two in the back, have a look up front. We've got to look at it, so you might as well. And as sure as I sit in this chair, the air was black. It was quite a calm day, and the air was black. It looked just as though somebody had got a paintbrush with black paint and painted a big square. And we'd got about 15 seconds to fly through this lot. Anyway, we got through. We got hit, but we got through.
And that was the flak.
That was flak, yeah.
Now that's your second tour, from the looks of this. That looks like it's in November 1944.
Oh. Aye, well, what actually happened?
But you also moved to Harper Bridge.
Yeah.
Tell me how the changeover comes.
Well, it's just one of those things that they decide the squadrons are going to move, and that's it. The move.
So where did you move to? Where is Harper Bridge?
Harper Bridge is oh dear. I'm not sure whether it's.
It's all right, we'll look it up, you know.
Yeah. The whole squadron moved there.
And you seem to finish your tour in April, your first tour.
It's quite a long story, you see.
That's what happened.
Well, 20 was the number. You did, or 30 rather, 30 trips, and then you were rested. But the skipper, very craftily, managed to persuade the powers that be that he was on his second tour. And he wasn't. And eventually the CO realised that we'd done well over the 30. And he sent for him, and after a bit of an argument, he said to Collins, right, Collins, you can do 5 more and then you're on rest. We were hoping, it was at the time of, just prior to the invasion, we were hoping that they'd forget about us, but anyway, they didn't.
Why didn't you want to finish? I mean,
well, it was, I don't know, I suppose, looking back on it, it looks silly. You know, but we enjoyed squadron life. We got on well together, and we were quite happy. Anyway, we were given, I think it was 5 more to do, and one of them turned out to be a night intruder. They decided to try Mitchell's for night intruder.
What does that mean?
Well, that means that you go out on your own at night. Oh, well, we got 3 aircraft.
That was on the 11th of April.
Well, that would be towards the end of our first tour.
I think the last one was the 20th, yeah. What happened on the 11th of April?
What happened on what?
On the night intruder.
Well, the night intruder was, 3 aircraft were set to bomb Tours Aerodrome. I mean, when we knew we were going on night intruder, we expected it to be just on the coast, quick in and out. But anyway, it was Tours Aerodrome. And we didn't make it. I think it was the squadron leader was one, and Flight Louis was the other one, and we were warrant officers, I think, at the time. Anyway, the other two didn't go. Squadron leader never left the dispersal, he had problems there, and the other one turned around back at the coast. So we were the only one of the 3 that went. And it was a bit of a fiasco, actually, because I suppose I ought not to say this, but the navigation officer, trying to be helpful, it was a new thing, everybody was interested, you see, night intruder, something new. The navigation officer drew up the flight sheets for the navigators as far as he could. Well, we set off. Our first turning point was a lake, and we got to where the lake should be, and it wasn't there. So we did a square search. Can't be far away. We did a square search. Still couldn't find it. So skipper said, give me a course, Reg. We'll find something. And we set off, and we'd been going quite a long time, and the navigator blew up. And what had happened, he always worked in pencil on his flight sheet. And the nav officer had filled in the flight sheet for the navigator, and he'd done it in ink. And of course this stood out, and we'd been flying on the wrong course. So we did a reciprocal course and set off for home. And I remember suddenly the skipper said, "We're all right, Roger, there's the coast." And I can hear him now. He said, "Well, it bloody well shouldn't be, because it's not due for 10 minutes. And it turned out to be a low bank of cloud. But anyway, we got back all right.
So all round it's been a bit of a failure, that much.
It was, and it was due to the nav officer trying to be too helpful, you see.
Now, when you finished, so you finished, what, 20th of April was your last one. Do you remember, on that first tour, do you remember the last operation, or did it stick in your mind, or was it?
No.
Now, you'd done 49 sorties by then.
Yeah.
And 38
and a half. As I told you yesterday, sea sweeps and things like that counted as off and up.
But that's way over the 30 anyway, which is...
Oh, yes.
How did you feel at the end of the time? I know you wanted to carry on, but were you relieved you didn't have to do it for a bit?
Well, no, there was one thing about it, though. We were posted as a crew to Boscombe Down on an experimental unit. Flying.
IFD flight. What did IFD stand for? Do you know?
IFD. No. No. IFD. No idea.
Look it up. Okay. And that was, but it was at Boscombe Down anyway.
It was Boscombe Down.
Now, it was. You had to leave because you went there in July. I presume you did.
Possibly. I'm not sure now, to be quite honest.
What were you doing at Boscombe Down?
Oh, we were testing the Bristol Buckingham, which was an aircraft built to Air Minister specifications to replace the Mosquito out east, because they were having a lot of trouble with white ant. And...
Eating them, basically. I've never heard of the Bristol Buckingham.
No, well, very few people have, because it didn't really come to anything.
What was it like? Can you describe it?
I'll tell you what the crews that flew it called it. They called it the abortion. And they said it flew like a ruptured duck.
In what way?
Well, it was built to Air Minister specification. It was quite noisy. It was fast. But it was... It was a silly effort, because the navigator, instead of sitting at the side of the pilot, he was in a sort of a glass effort underneath, and he was supposed to navigate. And the thing that fascinated me at the time was he'd got a windscreen wiper on the front of the thing. He was supposed to navigate. And then if you were attacked, he was supposed to turn around in this little effort and fire the guns. Now, I was a wireless operator, and all I'd got was a porthole, about so big,
about a foot across,
and that no guns. Well, of course, there were no guns fitted then, because it was an experimental aircraft. But It was a bad design altogether, but it was designed to Air Minister specification. That was the daft part about it.
And what sort of tests were you doing on it as a crew?
What sort of?
Tests.
What, with this particular aircraft?
Yeah.
Oh, we did diving tests and top speed tests and all sorts of things, but we didn't stop long.
No, I don't think you seem to be only there a week or so. How come you end up back with 226 London in
the thing is that we were out in this thing and the weather was very, very bad and the skipper had a job to land it. The conditions were really bad. And he put it down and he says, I'm not flying the thing anymore. And he went to the bloke in charge and he said, I'm not flying this anymore. He was reported to the station commander, of course, and he had to go and see him. And he said, he wanted him to sign an LMF form. There's a bloke here on his second tour, a DFM. He got his DFC later. And he wanted him to sign an LMF form. Lack of moral fibre. He said, I'll get another pilot sent in for your crew. So Colley says to him, they won't fly with anybody else. And anyway, the CO dismissed him, and that's it. He went straight back to our CO, charge of the flight, and he said, well, I'm not flying it anymore. I'm no good to you. He said, you might as well give us some leave. And we managed to get some leave out of it. And the navigator and the pilot went back to the squadron. Tom, the gunner, came home with me. I brought him home. But the other two went to the squadron. And they found out a couple of bots or a crew that were due for rest. So they recommended Boscombe down to them as going as a crew, you see. Because very often when you went on rest, you got split up and that was it. And shortly afterwards, a signal came through that we were being replaced and we were to go back to Swanton Morley. So we went back to Swanton.
That seemed to have been at Hartford Bridge then.
No, Hartford Bridge, I beg your pardon. We went back to Hartford Bridge and we started our second tour.
So you didn't have much rest at all?
No, we had about 3 months.
Now, had the squadron changed much in the absence?
No.
You know, I mean, 3 months is quite a long time sometimes in a squadron.
No, it was... It's difficult to describe, but you work together. You see, when you were on the trip, there were 24 of you in a box. And everybody got a job to do, and everybody was responsible for 24 lives.
This is the formation you flew in.
Yeah, well, we always flew in formation.
So morale in the unit was very high.
It was great, yes it was.